possible to do that in an hour of chair. We need, and at the minimum, a whole day. I think we need to take members through that. So you must just come back to us and tell us whether you need something like that, and we are very happy to do that and to take members through a more sort of comprehensive process to explain to them the different tax products and so on. Okay, so I'm going to kick off, Chair. Nati, my colleague here, will also, I'm going to at some stage hand over to him to do a portion of it. So we will alternate between us, if you don't mind, Chair.
You can follow your own director there.
Thank you. So, Chair, SARS was created as a public entity or a legal entity outside the public service, but still within the broad public administration in 1997. Before that, we used to be sort of directorates. There was a Directorate of Inland Revenue and a Directorate of Customs and Excise. And they were directors within the broader finance department. But we then moved out of the Department of Finance and became a legal entity or a separate organ of state with a level of autonomy. That gave us a certain level of control over our own resources. And that was done in terms of the SARS Act, number 34 of 1997. Now, the Act spells out exactly what is the mandate of SARS, what our functions are, what our powers are, etc. But in a nutshell, our mandate is to efficiently and effectively collect all revenue, and revenue, we mean all the national taxes that needs to be collected. That's ultimately deposited into the National Revenue Fund from where government's expenditure is then ultimately utilized. It is our job to ensure the enforcement of all the tax and customs legislation, and then also to provide a customs system by controlling the movement of goods that are coming into South Africa, or sometimes goods are just coming in and move through South Africa to our neighboring states up north, or sometimes it comes from them and it moves through South Africa and it leaves Africa from one of our harbors or one of our ports of entry. Then we also advise the Minister of Finance on matters concerning revenue, and whenever we talk revenue, we mean sort of the main taxes. But although tax policy is not really the domain of SARS, tax policy is the domain of the National Treasury, but we work very closely with them in the development of the tax policy, because tax policy and tax administration are almost the two sides of the same coin. In developing your policy, you've got to keep in mind whether at the end of the day it is going to be practical to implement such a policy at the end of the day. So that's why there's a very close cooperation between us. Then we also have close links with the Ministry of Trade and Industry on matters concerning the control of goods. Trade and industry, of course, they develop the trade policy, and we implement some of the trade policy. So we implement some of the tax policies, and we also implement some of the trade policies through the customs and excise legislation. The next slide, the SARS Act also, in broad terms, spells out what the responsibilities of the commissioner is. Remember, the commissioner is the head of SARS and heads us up as an organization. Now, the commissioner sort of wears three different hats. The one is that he or she is the chief executive officer of SARS and is therefore responsible for the management of SARS and to ensure that the SARS performs in terms of the functions that have been assigned to it in terms of the different acts. A second hat that the commissioner also wears is that of the accounting authority, in our case the accounting officer, because as SARS we don't have a board. There are some public entities that have a decision-making board, and in those cases the board is the accounting officer. In our instance, the commissioner himself is the accounting officer. It's like in the head of a department where the DG is also the accounting officer. And therefore, in that capacity, he or she is responsible for the proper financial management of SARS. And then thirdly, the commissioner is responsible for the administration of all the tax and customs laws and the implementation of all those laws. Now, obviously, the commissioner himself or herself can't implement or administer all the laws as a person, so therefore the laws provide certain governance structures. Many of these tasks are assigned or delegated to different levels, and the laws actually spells out which tasks can be performed by the commissioner, which tasks can be performed by senior SARS officials in SARS, and which tasks can be performed by ordinary officers in SARS. So there's a delegation structure within the different tax laws. This is just a high-level organogram of SARS. So although we do not have a board in SARS, we have an EXCO or an executive committee, which is an informal structure. It's not legislated. And the commissioner heads up our executive committee. Then you will see there are four chief sort of officers that sits in the executive committee. If we start the third level there on the left, there's the operations division. It's headed up by Mr. Barry Hoare. That's really the bulk of SARS. And in SARS, we now have just over 14,000 persons working in SARS. And I would say about two-thirds of the 14,000 works in that part of SARS, in the operational area. That's really where the factory of SARS is. Next to it is the HR department. It's headed up by Ms. Elizabeth Kumalo. Then there's the legal and policy part that I'm responsible for. They have a strategic division. It's headed up by Mr. Peter Richer. And at the last row on the left-hand side, we have a customs and tax enforcement and investigations unit. That unit really takes care of more the sort of high-level enforcement cases where there are mostly fraudulent activities involved. So it's the big investigations that they are doing, and most of their cases, many of those cases, they ultimately hand over to the National Prosecuting Authority as well. And that's headed up by Mr. Jean Ravelli. Then we have a finance department. Mr. Bob Head is heading that up. Then we have a large business center. Lillian here is actually from the large business center. That is headed up by Sunita Manik. And then we have an internal audit division that's headed up by Brian Gormo. That's sort of, in a nutshell, Chair, the broad operating model of SARS. Right at the top, we have the strategic part, so that and that's Mr. Peter Richer's department. They developed a sort of high-level strategy for SARS. And below that, you have areas that develop the process, do all the sort of process improvement. They develop the sort of high-level standard operating procedures. We have an information management area that collects all the basic or crucial information from SARS so that we can have a proper dashboard to monitor the operations of SARS from there. And then we have a compliance and an operational risk area, which develops what are the main risk areas that we should focus on from a SARS point of view. Then in the middle part there, you will see on the left-hand side, SARS to some extent works on a segmented approach. We have the large business center where all the big companies are on register. All the listed companies are on register there, the company listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Also, all the multinational companies are registered there. And then even unlisted companies with a turnover in excess of 250 million are registered there. And then even within the LDC, there are elements of segmentation. There's, for example, a mining division. All mining companies are registered there. All the financial centers of financial institutions like banks and long-term insurance companies, short-term insurance companies, they are all registered in the large business center. Then we have a sort of a tax practice part where the to some extent that works together with the legal and policy division lower down that develops the high level sort of interpretation and rulings in SARS. We have then also other business areas, informal business, more formal business outside the LBC. We're going to have a much bigger focus now on small business as well. So there are different elements of segmentation within SARS, where we focus specifically on specific taxpayers or taxpayer groupings. Then in the middle there, you can see how people can access SARS. You can access SARS either through the branches. People can come in person and visit our SARS branches, or you can access us through the call centers, or there's also a self-service that you can do through the e-channels that we now provide electronically as well. And then on the right-hand side is really the factory part of SARS, where all the transactions are really sort of processed. There's a compliance part. That's where all the returns are being filed, where all the processing is happening, the collections are happening, the account management are done from there. So that's really the factory part of SARS. Then at the bottom we have a modernization and IT and business system department that supports us from an IT and a modernization and a business systems perspective. Then we have the legal and policy side. We work very closely with the National Treasury in setting the tax policy and also the official sort of policy as far as the interpretation of the tax, different tax laws are concerned. And then we have a communications and external relations division as well. So that's more or less broadly how SARS functions and the different areas. From a governance point of view, I think SARS is managed or governed, I think, from various angles and different entities or structures or mechanisms assist to play an oversight role as far as that. Obviously, in the first instance, we report to the Minister of Finance. We are subject to the Public Finance Management Act, so our financials management must be in terms of the PFMA, our procurement processes, and reporting, etc. All of that must be done in terms of the PFMA. We are subject to the auditing of the Auditor General's office. The Auditor General is our official auditor. Then obviously Parliament, where we report into both houses of Parliament. The courts are there. If taxpayers are not happy with our decisions, ultimately, we can be taken on review, or people can appeal against decisions of SARS, and we are subject into the courts. And that's both. We have a dedicated tax court, but taxpayers also have access to the high courts, or ultimately to the appellate division, or even to the constitutional court ultimately. We have now got the Office of the Tax Ombud. You will remember when we passed the Tax Administration Act, it also went through this house. There were lots of debates around that. So the Tax Ombud Office has now been officially established, and taxpayers, if they are not happy with procedural or administrative issues, they can flag that with the Office of the Tax Ombud. The Office of the Tax Ombud does not normally intervene into the interpretation of the laws or tax policy issues, but they are there to assist taxpayers if they have procedural or administrative difficulties with SARS. For example, if somebody SARS takes too long in resolving your query or your appeal or whatever the case might be. We have an external audit committee that that also oversees SARS with external members that sits on the audit committee. We have our own internal audit that also plays an independent role in keeping us on our toes. Then, of course, there are the various other laws that, then the tax laws that we are subject to. There are many, many other laws like the Promotion of Access to Information Act, or the Promotion of Administrative of Justice Act, to make sure that SARS, when it makes decisions, that it's done in a fair and a proper way, and that we give reasons for our decisions. Thank you very much. So there are many, many other laws. So this is just a brief synopsis of some of the governance mechanisms in SARS. And these are the core values that we aspire to. They are also in our annual report that we have this. We are in the process of adjusting our code of conduct for our SARS employees as well. We have one, but we are in the process of updating that. And once that is done, we're going to workshop that right through SARS to make sure that our employees adhere to a proper code of conduct and the core values of SARS. So then when we get to the different tax laws, I'll ask Nati just at a very high level to take us through that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll quickly run through the laws that are administered by SARS. This is where basically the revenue is coming from. The main taxes basically is the personal income tax, which is housed under income tax, and currently it's our biggest contributor in terms of revenue, and all of us sitting in this room, we are contributing towards that. The corporate income tax, which is mainly from the legal entities, which is also housed under Income Tax Act. The value-added tax, which is basically the consumption tax on the end user, leveraged 14%, that is housed under the value-added tax. In addition, we have smaller taxes like dividend tax and donations tax. Next slide. We also administer the skills development levy, which basically eventually allocated to the various sectors. We have the estate duty as well, security transfer tax, and transfer duty. Just to explain briefly, the personal income tax, that is the tax on individuals, on their taxable income, if it's above the tax threshold, and the bulk of this tax is basically coming from the pay-as-you-earn, which is deducted monthly from employees, and provisional tax, which is mainly the income that is not from employment, like business income. And then what is important as well is that the PAYE is deducted on the monthly basis from by the employer on behalf of SARS from employment income, and provisional tax is mainly on the tax that is not employment income, like business income and all that, and that's mainly paid on 6 monthly basis, which is on 31st of August and 28th of February. And all these taxes, basically the system, the PYE system and the provisional tax, is not extra tax, but is tax towards basically the final tax liability. It helps individuals to ensure that they don't have a huge tax liability when they submit their tax returns. Next slide, please. Company tax, as I indicated earlier, is tax on legal entities, and that's at the rate of 28%. The bulk of that is paid through the provisional tax system. And then small business has got concessionary rates to try basically and incentivize small businesses. The other tax basically is a custom tax, which basically have customs duty, excise duty, air passenger tax, fuel levy, and air departure tax, and electricity levy. I'll hand over to Mr. Dahl.
Thank you. Then, Chair, SARS uses a compliance model in applying the different tax laws, and basically the compliance model rests on three pillars. If you look at the big pyramid in the middle, at the bottom we have the education part, so we help people to try and educate them as far as tax is concerned. from a very low level, we now even start to at a school and university level try to start educating people about their tax obligations, so one day that when they start employment or their own businesses, that they are familiar with some of the basic concepts of taxation. Then on the right-hand side, the blue part there is the service part, that we try to make it as easy and as possible for taxpayers to pay their taxes, especially for the compliant taxpayers, to assist them that they can pay their taxes with the least amount of friction of annoyance. And then the red part at the top of the pyramid is the enforcement part. Unfortunately, there are always this small part of the community that are not compliant as far as taxation is concerned, and for that you need additional measures to make them comply. And then at the top that you will see the proportional type of effort that we put into these different types of taxpayers. On the left-hand side, the pyramid at the top, if you look at the bottom slice there, obviously the vast majority of taxpayers are compliant and are willing and able to comply with the tax laws. And on the right-hand side, you can see for them we try to facilitate voluntary compliance and to make it as easy as possible for them. Then you have the middle segment there. There's the willing part, but they're not able to. We try to assist them also to comply with the tax laws. And then you have the small element at the top, the unwilling part, and for them we must use, unfortunately, the full force of the law to make sure that we get the taxes so that we have a level of a playing field, because it's not a fair process at the end of the day if only a certain part of the population pay tax and others are not paying tax. Chair, this slide gives you a sort of a basic overview of the sort of life cycle as far as the tax part of SARS is concerned. You'll see always at the top we have the three areas, the education, the service, and the enforcement part. But with most of our taxes, Chair, whether it is now income tax or whether it is VAT, or any one of the other taxes, there's always a cycle that you move through. You've got to register as a taxpayer, you've got to file a return, you then get an assessment, and then you must pay your tax, but there's an opportunity for you, if you're not in agreement, that you can dispute the assessment, and there's a dispute mechanism. So you will see the life cycle there. On top we have the legislative mandate, but then there's a registration part, there's a filing part or a declaration part, a dispute management, a receivable, that's the debt collection part, and then we audit when certain taxpayers, and our audit processes work either on a random basis or on a risk basis, and then there's ultimately the judicial processes if we need to go to the tax courts. We also have an alternative dispute resolution mechanism. We nowadays resolve most of our disputes through alternative dispute mechanisms, because it's just impossible to process all the disputes through the tax courts. The sort of blocks on the left-hand side, Chair, there in the left-hand corner there, the one heading education and outreach, you can see some of the statistics of the campaigns that we've done from an education or an outreach point of view. We've done campaigns with employers and employees. That's mostly teaching them about the basics of PIT and pay as you earn, etc. We have other campaigns in the middle that you will see there, that we do it sometimes together with other government agencies. The MTUs, those are the mobile tax units. We have a few of, I think there's 9 of these vehicles that go to some of the more areas where we don't have a permanent presence, and they visit some of those areas and towns where we don't have a tax branch. And those mobile tax units, they are electronically and in contact with our head office, so they can communicate from those units as well. We have interventions at schools as well, and then various other institutions that we visit. You can see the numbers there. The block just next to it, Chair, at the top gives you a little bit of an insight of the SARS footprint. We have 62 sort of branches across South Africa. We have the 9 mobile tax units. We have 34 ports of entry. We have, you can see there, 22 pieces of legislation that we administer. You get an idea of the registers that we have there from an individual point of view, companies, etc. The number of filing transactions, you can see there, the number of queries that we get on an annual basis, the number of audits that we are doing, the revenue collections, and so on. That gives you a very brief overview of who's doing what in SARS through this sort of life cycle approach towards the different tax types. Our headcount, you can see we are now just over 14,000. We've actually shrunk as far as the headcount is concerned. We were just over 15,000. But with a lot of the automation that has happened in SARS, if you think back 5 years or more back, a lot of our processes were just still paper-driven. Today, we have tried to get rid of paper in SARS, and everything is almost electronic today. So we have become more efficient as far as that is concerned, so that's why the headcount is actually shrinking as far as that is concerned. So. The next slide, you will see the sort of the customs value chain. And, there are many similarities as well, but customs is unique also in its own sense. So from a customs perspective, we will start there, number one, with the control of places of entry of exit. There are always dedicated places in in South Africa where goods and persons can enter exit South Africa. And those can be now harbors, it can be a land border post, it can be airports, etc. So those are all dedicated areas from where goods and passengers and people enter and exit South Africa. Then the control starts because as far as customs is concerned, it's to a large extent about the control of goods, but nowadays we try to find a fine balance between control and to facilitate trade, because we also don't want to hamper trade because it can have a huge negative impact on the economy and the trade value chain. So we try and make things as smooth as possible, but unfortunately there's got to be an element of control because it is our duty also to protect the economy, to protect the society, to make sure that they are not illegal or unwanted goods or goods that are at too low values when coming into the country, because it can cause all sorts of distortions from an economic point of view. Control nowadays actually starts even before goods are arriving at our borders. We also nowadays rely heavily on advanced reporting, so even when goods are loaded, say, in a ship in Hong Kong or wherever, from we start to get advanced reporting of before the ship actually leaves the departing harbor in a foreign country. We start getting reports of what exactly are on the ship. The same with aircraft, what's on the aircraft before it actually leaves a foreign airport. So control actually starts at a much earlier stage nowadays. Then there's registration and licensing. The licensing is an additional aspect in the customs area. In the tax world, you mainly have a registration process, but in the customs area, we also license sometimes people and also certain premises like warehouses or container terminals or whatever the situation might be. And then there is a strict control over the movement of goods. As when it reaches the borders, that we've got to know every step of the way. Who's in control of the goods? What's the tax status of those goods? Because in a customs world, the customs duty only kicks in when the goods are released for home consumption. But it sometimes takes a while before goods are released for home consumption. Goods might be imported, but it still, first of all, goes into a warehouse, and it might stay in a warehouse because, say, a person imports goods for sale in South Africa, the person can't stock it all in its shop, so it keeps it in a warehouse, and then it's released, you know, as the capacity is created in the shop or in the retail world for the goods to be released for home consumption. So goods can move through different stages before it actually goes into home consumption. And from a customs point of view, we've got to know every step of the way who are in control of those goods and where those goods are. Then, ultimately, when goods are released or cleared, and goods can be cleared for different reasons, as I say, it can either go into home consumption or it just moves, it comes into South Africa, it moves through South Africa into higher up into Africa, into our neighboring states, or sometimes goods come into South Africa for processing and it never goes into home consumption, and it then immediately thereafter is exported again. So there are different types of clearances of goods as well. There's also a collection part ultimately for those goods, as I say, that does go into home consumption. There's an enforcement part, and then there's also a dispute resolution part. So that's more or less the customs value chain. Tax practitioners, Chair, they play a very important role as intermediaries to assist taxpayers to comply with their tax obligations. And here, this is so from both sides, both from a tax point of view and also in the customs world as well, where we have the clearing agents who play a big role in assisting importers and exporters. Tax practitioners are nowadays properly controlled or regulated in terms of the Tax Administration Act, and it's only a tax practitioner that belongs to a recognized controlling body that are allowed to charge taxpayers for the advice that they give. So taxpayers must make sure that before they use the services of a tax practitioner, that such a tax practitioner belong to a body that has been recognized by SARS. On the third bullet, you see that they must also, if we can just go back one slide. So there's two levels there. The tax practitioners must register with SARS, and the body to which they belong is also recognized by SARS. And we just mentioned the act in terms of which it is controlled. International agreements, Chair. SARS is involved in different types of international agreements. On the tax side, the main agreements that we are involved with in the negotiation and finalization thereof are the agreements for the avoidance of double taxation, and then also the tax exchange information agreements. Now, currently we have 73 of these double taxation agreements that are in force, and there are 6 of them that are in the process of negotiation, and there's 8 of them that have been signed, but they have not been ratified yet. And there's 8 tax information agreements in force. 10 of them, 10 are under negotiation, and 5 of them have been signed, but they have not been ratified yet. Now, these agreements, in the first instance, we must go back to the Constitution, Section 231 deals with international agreements, and there's 2 types of international agreements. The sort of full-blown international agreements that either have a financial impact or an impact on legislation. Those are the Section 2312 agreements in terms of the Constitution. And those agreements require ratification by both Houses of Parliament. And you will see, I think, one of these days there is a tranche of these agreements that are going to come to your committee as well for ratification. Now, Chair, these agreements, the double taxation agreements, are in the first instance, the Treasury and the Minister in the first instance decides whether South Africa should enter into these agreements. And some of the criteria that they use are what are the sort of then trade flows into South Africa, what are the investment flows or the cross-border flows between South Africa and the potential country, what's the tax system of the country, etc. So, and to a large extent, the intention of these agreements are, on the one side, to ensure that there's not double taxation. In other words, that the same person is not taxed twice in both country in both countries. And then, secondly, it is also to ensure that or to combat tax evasion, because all these agreements have a exchange of information clause, so that we can obtain information from another country. If we think somebody is perhaps hiding income in another country, we can request the other country to provide information for us about the financial situation of the specific taxpayer itself. Okay. On the next slide, Chair, we also have international agreements from a customs and a VAT perspective. Now, these are mostly mutual assistance agreements, and these agreements are mainly of a technical nature, and they don't have to be actually ultimately ratified in South Africa unless by Parliament. It's only tabled in Parliament, but it might be that it might be need ratification in another country. So currently we have 15 customs mutual assistance agreements in force. There's 11 under negotiation and 6 that are signed, but only needs been tabling in Parliament, but possibly ratification in the other jurisdiction. Then there's 2 VAT mutual assistance agreements as well. And as I said, they are Section 2313 of the Constitution agreements. They are only of a technical nature. SARS also assisted with the one-stop border post agreement between South Africa and Mozambique. I think, Chair, you will remember we had that agreement also before your committee. I think it was last year. We have now gone through both houses of Parliament of that one. We are in the process now of exchanging diplomatic notes. South Africa has given Mozambique notice that we want to implement. We're waiting for the diplomatic note from Mozambique. As soon as we've got that, then the agreements will be promulgated in the Government Gazette and it will be in force.
Komati Poort?
Yes, that's the Komati Poort one.
And the one where you come in at KZN, Kosibai, there's also a border.
Yeah, but this one is only the Garcia, the one, the El Komati Poort one, yeah. This one, yeah. The second one that we're looking at this stage is the one between Zimbabwe and South Africa, I mean, Bite Bridge.
Yeah.
We are thinking of a one-stop border post. We've already had 2 engagements with these Zimbabweans on that one, but I think it'll still take a while, but that's the next one in line, Chair. Then there are many, many multilateral and bilateral preferential trade agreements that SARs are also involved with. And if you can think of, for example, the EU multilateral trade agreement, where there are many, many preferential tariffs for different goods that are imported or exported between South Africa and Europe. So there are, to open up the markets, there are preferential tariffs for most of the products as well. There's the SADC one, and there's many, many others as well, Chair. These agreements are mainly negotiated by trade and industry, but we implement them ultimately. Just from SARs volumetrics point of view, we will take you through a few slides. This is what, just want to give you an indication of what is the sort of ratio between the direct tax collections and indirect tax collections. You can see in 94-95 total tax collections stood at just over 100 billion. To last year, you'll see it now sort of knocks on the door of the 900 billion. And you can see the split between direct tax and indirect tax. Direct tax is still the biggest proportion, and indirect taxes is sitting, I think, here in the sort of high 30% sort of, and the balance is direct tax. Direct taxes are now taxes such as income tax, all the different kinds of income taxes, personal income tax, company income tax, many of the other and smaller taxes like transfer duties that Nati has spoken of earlier. Indirect taxes are taxes like value-added tax, customs, duty, etc. Next slide. This gives you a bit of an indication just of the main tax types. Once again, we started in 1994, and you can see now in 2013 where we are. The bottom, the blue part, is the PIT, the personal income tax. You can still see a very large proportion, around about, I would say here, 34% comes from personal income tax. That's the tax that individuals pay. You can see that sort of orange-brown part is the company income tax. You can see in 1994, companies contributed, I would say, about 10% of all the tax. You can see how it slowly started to grow. And in 2008, 2009, just before the financial crisis, we increased the company tax contribution quite dramatically. I think it was more than 20% in those years. And then the financial crisis hit us, and the company, the corporate sector, was the hardest hit by the financial sector. And you can it shrunk back to almost 10%, but it's growing slowly again. And I think it now sits at 18-19% again, more or less, that we get from companies. The green part there is the value-added tax that we get. That remained quite stable, I think, over the last 20 years. Then you get the excise taxes. Those are the sort of the taxes on alcoholic products, tobacco products, and so on. And the fuel levy is the light blue there at the top, and then the rest is some of the smaller taxes, customs duties, and other taxes. This just gives you it in a different format. I think this is also the 2013-14 split. It just gives you to you percentage-wise what we get from the different tax products, how it is sliced up. The STC stroke DT there, that stood for, you will remember, we had a secondary tax on companies. That was abolished, I think, was it 2 years ago or so, and it was replaced by a dividends tax. So the DT stands for a dividends tax. So that's all, and dividends that are being distributed. by companies. If it goes to individuals, basically then the dividends that flows to South African individuals are paying the dividend tax. It go, I mean, offshore as well, but there are much lower rates in terms of the treaties that apply to it. And the PIT is personal income tax, CIT corporate income tax. Right, the next slide. That gives you an indication of the tax revenue expressed as a percentage of GDP. You can see we were well below 25% in 1994. We sat at, I would say that was around 23%, more or less there. Then you could see the boom years that we had here from 2002, 2003. Things, the economy really boomed and grew a lot during those years. You will remember we, in those years, 2007, we actually had a surplus, I think for 2 years from a revenue point of view, where our tax revenue actually was more than our government spending. And that's where we created a little bit of fiscal space for us, and that's why we could sort of absorb a little bit of the economic shock that followed there, that you could see then the economic crisis hit us and we fell back to below 25%, but we're slowly creeping back. We are, I think, around about 26, but we're not at the 27, 28 levels that we were in 2008-2009. This one, Chair, gives you an indication of the cost, what is the cost of collecting revenue. it's expressed as a percentage of tax revenue. you could see the numbers there in 1994, 95, and then now in 2013, 2014, it is about 1%. We're back around at about 1% of total tax revenue. That's the cost of collecting all the taxes. Just give you a bit of an international comparison on cost of collection of taxes. You can see South Africa is there on the right-hand side, on the far right-hand side, where we give it for those 3 years, 2009, 10 and 11. There we were just over 1%, the cost of collection, and there you can see how we compare with other countries. Oops, I think is it too fast? We're sort of in the middle range, Chair. There are some that have got higher cost ratios than us, and there are some that have got lower cost ratios than us. But the sort of 1% is the sort of international benchmark. The next one gives you a little bit of an indication from the customs side, the collections from a customs point of view. Remember, on the customs side, customs collects also the import VAT. In other words, remember, VAT is not just paid on supplies made in South Africa. In other words, something that you buy at a shop in South Africa. It's also on the importation of goods. So, and because customs is also on the importation of goods, it makes sense that we join the collection of those two taxes. So the customs part of SARS also collects the VAT on the importation of goods. So you could see, and the VAT, you could see, is much higher, of course, than customs. You could see what it was in 2005-06. It was around about 68 billion. and we are expecting In 2016-17, it will sit around 250 billion. Customs is not a big part of revenue collecting, but it plays a big role in trade policy, Chair. On the next slide, you can see the imports and exports numbers. The blue part are the imports, and the sort of brown red part is the imports. Sorry, that's blue is the exports, and the other one is the imports. And you can see for each of the years we've got it, both for the BLNS, that's the BLNS countries, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia and Swaziland, and then the other one is the international one with the world. So you can see 2010 the numbers there. With BLNS countries, you will see right across, we export much more to the BLNS countries than what we import from them. Our imports from them are minute in comparison to the exports. But you can see now consistently over the last few years, our imports are exceeding our exports, which is not a good sign, because we have a negative trade balance then, which is not such a good thing for South Africa. Sorry? Yeah, well, that oil is a big part of imports, yeah. But also, large machinery, consumer goods, is a lot, but oil is a big one, is one of the big ones, yes. On the next slide, this one gives you just an overview of the number of persons or passengers or people arriving in South Africa or departing from South Africa. So you could see the numbers almost doubled from 2010 to 2013. So most of these people are processed through our customs systems because many of them carry goods, etc. And this is now just not through the airports, this is now through all the ports of entry, through our land border posts, through airports, through harbors, etc., where persons arriving in South Africa or exiting South Africa. See, on the modernization side, I think we have in the past given the committee some insight and overview of the modernization journey that we've had over the last 5 to 7 years. In broad, I think it boiled down to a large part to reducing, simplifying and standardizing a lot of our returns, number one. Number two, automating a lot of the processes in SARS, removing paper. Paper was a massive issue. You can think, just to the previous slide, if 20 million people coming into South Africa and each one had to fill in a form when they come in and when they leave, or all the goods that are coming in, there's a piece of paper and it needs to be stamped, and or from on the tax side, all the forms that needs to be filled in. It was a massive issue. So nowadays, almost 99% or 99.8% of on the tax side, or PIT, is electronic. We've come a long way of getting third-party information to enable us to start pre-populating returns. So you will see nowadays when you get your tax return is already completed with your employer's details or your income, etc. There's still some areas that you need to complete when other income that you receive, etc. And we are working towards that. We are now getting information from the financial institutions. We know exactly what interest income people earn. We get it from the banks and the financial centers, we get the information from medical institutions, what your medical contributions are. We get all that information electronically nowadays. So hopefully over time we will be able to pre-populate the returns even more. We've increased our SARS footprint. We've opened more offices. There's the mobile units that where we don't have a physical presence that we can move the units there and access those more remote areas as well. On the customs side, we rolled out a new system last year. We've centralized the processing of customs now in mainly at four hubs. Risk is now done in a much better way. We get information, as I explained earlier on, locally from many South African institutions. We're now moving international as well. We start getting information international about taxpayers from other countries as well. So it's much easier to start doing a risk assessment of taxpayers, because it's impossible for us to audit all taxpayers. We just don't have the capacity to do that. So the trick is that your risk assessment tools show up in the non-compliant taxpayers that you should audit or investigate. So, Chair, this one just gives you a bit of an overview on the SARS footprint. The sort of orange-yellow one are all areas where we have main customs officers. Apologies, this one is perhaps not so clear, Chair, but the green one is where we have border posts. You will see right at the borders there with Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, you'll see the green dots all there. Those are all the land border posts on the out perimeter of South Africa there. And then we have, from a customs point of view, we have the harbors on the coastal areas, and then you will see the airports. There are nine international airports where we have customs officials stationed, and so international flights can only arrive in South Africa or leave South Africa from those. I think there's ten. Ten international airports. And the blue ones are the tax officers. The red ones are the sort of more bigger assessment centers. And then there's also developmental centers as well. The next slide, Chair. This one is more focused just on customs. You'll see on the land border post, all the land border posts on the outside perimeters. On the sea, you will see where the ships are, where we have international harbors, where international ships or where cargo is processed. And then we have the airports. Each province has got an international airport, and then I think Gauteng has got two international airports. Going forward, Chair, I think some of the priorities over time is to build and uplift the technical and skills base of our staff. We've concentrated a lot over the last few years in getting the operational part of SARS working smoothly, but we're now trying to further upskill our staff to assist taxpayers with more value-added men work, and wherever they've got queries or problems, that our staff can assist taxpayers to resolve those issues. Single registration is something that we started with, but it's going to take us a few years to bed that down. Previously, when you start, you had to register separately for each tax product. I mean, say if you're a business, you had to register for VAT, for income tax, etc., etc. We're trying to get a single registration product going now, or process where when you come to SARS, you register once for all your different tax products. And we also want to interface with other government agencies. We've already built links with CIPC, the company's office, We're working with Home Affairs to get their data. We're working with the Master's Office to get the trusts that are being registered, for example, and deceased estates that are being registered and liquidated or insolvent estates that go to the Master's Office, that we link up, so there's a more initiative going to work on a wider front as a sort of a government perspective, so that we align our functions with other government agencies where it also provides a benefit to SARS and makes us more efficient and effective. The implementation of the customs bills, Chair, you will remember we had the customs bills also here in your committee, the three customs bills. I think it was either end of last year or the beginning of this year. It was at the end of last year, I think we brought it here as well. Those bills must now be implemented. We started a steering committee around the implementation of the new customs bills. I think it will take us about a year or 18 months to prepare for the implementation. We're working with industry as far as that is concerned. We want to further refine our approach to taxpayers from a segmentation point of view. There's much more that we can do as far as small business is concerned. Small business is a very important segment, I think, also for the economy, and I think there's more that we can do from our side. The regulation of intermediaries, we've touched on it, the tax practitioners. There's some more work we would like to do and to work with them, and also on the customs side. I've talked about the collaboration with other government institutions so that we can streamline our work across government. And then border management is also a big issue. The BMA, that's on the cards. So that's an area that's also going to require our attention over time. See, that is more or less than it. Maybe we should stop here and if there are any questions or clarification, Chair. I hope we've pitched it at the right level and that it gave you a bit of an insight of what SARS is doing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Yeah, that's a mouthful of information. Honourable members, I'm going to give you a comfort break for 10 minutes. Get your cup of tea, whatever, and come back to your table and enjoy your tea at the table, because we have to adjourn at the latest at 12:30. There's provincial delegations meetings in Constitution now scheduled for 1 o'clock until 1:45, and we have some other business to cover as well. So quickly grab your tea and then come back, please.
The map. You recall I requested to be opened in Springbok. Now we are on that. That's a request for KZN.